Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. You are officially on the couch here with Dr. Michelle Cohen, as you always are, on Tuesdays now at 12 noon Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. My guest is at right now as we are live. Don't forget, in case you miss any of this show today, you can replay the show back on LA Talk Radio on our FaceTime live page. Check it out. And also will be on my On the Couch website page here on LA Talk Radio. And, of course, download, replay everything, and you'll be good to go. Also on Apple iPod, you can check those out as well. Today, what an incredible guest I have, and you'll be able to see her in just a sec. She'll be popping up on the screen. We're doing live radio and video here on our Facebook Live program. My special guest is very well known. You've probably read one of her books, most of my listeners out there. I know you. I know who you are. She's the author of an amazing new book. And this is, we're going all out psychology today. Many times we go into, you know, physiology of what's going on with your brain, why you're doing what you're doing, quantum consciousness, self-help, things like that. But this is beautifully written because this is a book about a serial killer, and it's going to send you on a journey that you've never been on. You can't put the book down once you start reading it. It's called Requiem for a Female Serial Killer. I will hold the book up now so you can see it. I'll be doing this several times during the show. And this psychological crime thriller, it takes us inside the mind of a unique female serial killer named Eileen Wuornos. You probably have heard of this case before. I'm not going to tell you too much because I want my guest to share her story. But Eileen murdered 7 adult men. Yeah, this is a case with which the author, my special guest today, was intimately involved. And the issues raised by this high-profile criminal case remain unsolved to this day. Women, even prostitutes such as herself, have the right to self-defense in theory, right? But in practice, the story is a bit more complicated. So we're going to be talking about my special guest's involvement with the serial killer, and it has haunted her ever since. She speaks sort of in Eileen Wuornos' voice, as well as in her own. And in this book, she delivers an incisive, original, and dramatic portrait of a cognitively impaired, traumatized, and alcoholic woman who had endured so much pain. Compassion, guys, in her short life, when she'd had enough, the results were literally, figuratively deadly. So let me introduce my special guest, the author of this amazing book right now, Dr. Phyllis Chesler. Welcome to the couch.
My pleasure to be with you, and thank you so much for your kind words.
Oh, my goodness. It's lovely to have you. What a beautiful background of books. I love that. Well, Phyllis, let me just do a quick intro. It's very hard to do an introduction on you that doesn't last for 20 minutes. So let me just do this. So Dr. Phyllis Chesler is an emerita professor of psychology and women's studies at City University of New York. And also she's a best-selling author, a legendary feminist leader, retired psychotherapist, an expert courtroom witness. You may have seen her on television. I've seen her before. And she has lectured and organized political, legal, religious, and human rights campaigns in the United States, Canada, Europe, Israel, and the Far East. Her work has been translated into many European languages and also into Japanese, Chinese, Korean, Hebrew, and also, and I just want you guys to know who Phyllis is here. Dr. Tesler is a co-founder of the Association for Women in Psychology. She is a founder of this. The National Women's Health Network, back in 1974, she was doing this work, and the International Committee for the Original Women of the Wall back in 1989. She's a writing fellow at the Middle East Forum and a fellow at the Institute for the Study of Global Anti-Semitism and Policy. And by the way, just a little side note here, Phyllis has authored over 20 books. So you've got to know her by now, everybody. Again, so welcome to the couch, Phyllis. Without further ado, I want to get to your book. So it's Requiem for a Female Serial Killer. And as I said, the book is amazing. It's about Eileen Wuornos, and she was accused of killing seven, they say, or eight, but seven, as far as we know, adult male motorists in just over a year. And how did you personally become involved in this tragic story of Eileen?
When I heard the report on both radio and television that the cops were looking for two women who may be America's first female serial killers, which is not true, by the way, and I thought, what is going on? Because Florida, the corpses of prostituted women litter the highways and the landscapes because that's who male serial killers, that's their prey, women and prostituted girls and women. And I thought, is this a feminist collective? Did somebody finally, a swamp creature, freak out? And this is before Thelma and Louise.
Right.
Is somebody exacting some kind of justice or revenge, or is someone nuts?
Yes.
And it had so many of the themes that I've written about. And a friend of mine said, it's your case. So I was soon making a lot of phone calls and on a plane and trying to figure out how to have her public defender meet with me, which could only happen once I figured out a way of having Lee Wuornos call me, collect.
Wow.
And I got her attention. She paid attention. She's a very quick study. She picked up the feminist language instantly. And she told her public defender, you got to meet with this woman. And so that is how it began so long ago.
Yes, that's amazing. How fascinating to grab onto that and to be.
Well, you know, Madness, my first book, Women in Madness, even though that was not the issue that drew me to her. The issue was whether a woman has the right to kill in self-defense. And we know that many nice girl battered wives don't, because when they do, they get like life sentences with no parole. So here is a so-called not nice girl who's stigmatized for a very forced choice. What break would she possibly have? And would this jury or would the globe in general, everybody was on it, sleazoid sensation, would they understand how violent prostitution is? It's not a form of work. It's the greatest violence against womankind that exists. So did she have post-traumatic stress? No doubt. It's not possible for her not to. Did she consciously exact vengeance after the first struggle? I wrestle with these themes. And should she, at the end, after years on death row in isolation, she was legally insane, as most become, but they still executed her. Couldn't wait to do it, but took their sweet time to do it.
Right, right. That's such a tragic story, and I appreciate so much what you brought out in this book and your perspective. You had actually met and talked with her quite a bit. So that you really got a sense of who she was and how she struggled. She told you personally her story. So you also, as a psychologist, psychotherapist, we're really analyzing her background, and we're able to decipher exactly the trauma that she went through. What I loved is the way you sort of described her in the whole case and the story, in a fictional and non-fictional genre. So why did you decide to do it that way?
How else could I tell a story? She never had a break. Nothing was her fault. And indeed, as a child, she was savagely abused in Troy, Rochester, Michigan. No adult came to her rescue, and I write about, and this is not an uncommon background for girls who eventually run away, hit the highway as she did, and become prostitutes. Mm. So they're tracked by, but you know, in her case, she had a visual impairment and a cognitive impairment.
Oh, yeah.
Never corrected.
Right.
I think she had organic brain syndrome or a traumatic brain injury.
Right.
A very hairline triggered temper. Mm. And add to that the rapes and the gang rapes and the beatings that she endured, which is par for the course, yeah, in the life of a prostitute. Mm. So, you know, I have more compassion for her now, even though I now understand that she is a serial killer. For years, I didn't want to admit that to myself, foolish, naive me, because I was her advocate. And it was a group of feminists,
right,
who wanted to get justice for, yeah, a prostitute, right?
Yes, exactly. No, and I mean, that's exactly right. And of course, her upbringing, and as you said, she had chemical imbalance, organic brain disorder, not to mention her traumatic life that she experienced, and all of these factors sort of created this person, you know, and goodness knows, did you explore just something, you know, that might be interesting too, which I find interesting, so, is her parents, or was there any history of, you know, mental disability?
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Mm. She's of Finnish ancestry. Mm. Her biological father hung himself in jail. He'd been jailed for being a pedophile. Her biological mother was run out of town by the maternal grandparents, who then adopted her and her brother and allowed her to think that they were her parents. When I finally tracked her biological mother down, I had the most interesting conversation with her. Her name was Diane. And I begged her to visit her daughter on death row. And she said, oh, no, I'm too afraid of her.
Oh,
she's like the devil. Yeah.
Oh,
so one of the many things that happened was, in addition to being bullied and living in a car in the snow, and selling sex for food, she was then raped and impregnated by a so-called friend of her grandfather's. Yeah. And of course, she was forced to give up the child for adoption. That alone remains a deep wound and a trauma for birth mothers.
Yeah.
So that was just, and she apparently at the time, according to her aunt's sister, whose name was Lori Grody, she said, you know, men really hate our guts. And she was 14 at the time.
Wow.
And she hit the road at 15, you know,
sure,
sort of hitchhiking. And in so many ways, behaving like a child, an unruly, undisciplined, troubled child, shooting a gun out of a car, racing the car, not knowing how to save the money that her brother left for her when he died in an insurance policy, only concerned with the next couple of days.
Sure.
No long-range planning.
Sure.
And this didn't bother any of the men who bought their sex from this wounded, damaged, quote, crazy,
yes,
teenager.
Yes. And she was a teenager. She was very young. So just again, how How is she so radically different from regular male and female?
Well, no, that's a very important question. And I wrestle with it in the book. So you have Black widows, female serial killers who kill not strangers on the highway of life, but who kill husband after husband for money, for insurance money. And she's not like the nurses, both men and women, but certainly women, who kill patient after patient for money and because they can. And she's not like the women who become madams of brothels or escort agencies and who commit terrifying crimes against the girls who they've trapped in their clutches, killing them, torturing and killing them as their male counterparts do. So she's not like female serial killers, and she's not like the women who have been as abused as she was. Most very savagely abused women, they tend to go down quietly and softly, and they marry very bad dudes, and we don't hear about them again. Mm. Now, male serial killers, many of them that we know a lot about, get their sex through murder and torture, and leave women, mainly prostituted women, but not only, in these obscene gynecological poses, right? And it takes the police forever to find and stop them. She's not like any of this. Think of Ted Bundy, for example, who was really smart and strategic and quite hard to catch. He may have killed 100 girls and women before he was stopped. And his spiritual advisor was the prosecutor in Warnos's case. It's very Americana, you know? So she was disorganized. She didn't do this for a sexual thrill. The first time, I believe with my whole head and heart, she was in a monster struggle to save her life at the hands of a really bad guy who the jury was not allowed to hear about because the dead man is not on trial. So he'd been in jail for sex crimes, and he was a known big pornography addict and big whoremonger. Likely, he treated her badly. But now here she is. So she kills him in self-defense. Could she go to the police? Would they believe her? Or would they send her straight to jail? She doesn't have any credibility. She's considered a criminal. So, and I don't recommend legalizing prostitution or decriminalizing it to deal with that problem. So, which is another whole big discussion.
Yes.
And so she was drunk. She continued drinking. I think she may have changed after the first self-defense killing. I think so.
Yeah.
And I write about it in the book.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine this could be the first time since Columbus landed near America that a woman is killing a bunch of men who she doesn't know.
Right.
Some of whom may have been innocent Samaritans because her disguise was to pass for normal.
Yeah.
And she just had no makeup, her hair pulled back.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing shorts or cutoffs, a t-shirt, nothing special. And she would then get in the car and offer sex. Now, imagine after the first kill, she needed money to eat and for motel rooms. What if a man thereafter wanted something from her that she didn't want, that was too rough, that she ruled out as out of line? And she's very cognitively rigid.
Right.
She might kill him.
Yeah.
Or what if a man with lots of credit cards and a big car and a wife and a house and kids and grandkids, and she has nothing. What if he said, you know, I don't want to give you my money for sex with you, so just get out of the car. She might kill him too because she needed his money.
Right.
So she might have, after the first murder, right, she might have put in her own, if you will, affirmative action program.
Uh-huh.
Mess with me, you die.
Right. Interesting.
Now, again, this is a guess,
right,
but based on our correspondence, everything I've read, what she told me, it's possible.
Yes.
It makes possible. Sense. Also, two of the men were cops. And cops have been notorious for, okay, you're going to give me the sex, I'm not going to pay you, I'll arrest you if you don't.
Right.
So the two cops, the two former cops who picked her up, she shot them execution style, gangland style, in the head. And I wanted to go back and make a point. Unlike male serial killers, she had a kind of maternal protectiveness towards the corpses. So in the first kill, she didn't want to run over the corpse, and she didn't want the corpse to be pecked at by birds. So she covered the corpse with a mat. Now you could imagine the Yorkshire Ripper or the Green River Killer or Jack the Ripper doing that. No. Wouldn't happen. So totally unique, ultimately dangerous.
I suppose they probably utilized that fact in the courtroom case as well, as she had the wherewithal to go ahead and cover them up and be, you know, be aware that she didn't want them to be pecked at by, you know, or interesting.
Though that wasn't seen as in her favor, though, because she would pawn stuff in a very sloppy way.
Right.
Near where she lived or near where her haunts were.
Right.
And that she was easy to then follow up on. And she would often do it under interesting aliases. Cammy Green, the Marine. Oh. And she'd say she's about to be deployed to Saudi Arabia or the Middle East. So she had different personalities. Also that possible.
Right. No, perhaps. Wow, that's very interesting. Perhaps a disassociated disorder.
She would have to have disassociated from the multiple gang rapes and beatings and brushes with the law and time in jail. She comes from the kind of family where you don't call them for help. You're just lucky if they don't kill you, you know, so you get out of town. That's the level, right? State of Michigan, I hold it responsible. But she would have different voices. I'm not saying she's a multiple personality. I'm saying she would sometimes be pleading little girl, more often commanding, demanding, get the cops, get the crooked cops. And I couldn't get her to, none of us could get her to really focus on saving her life, because she was very invested in exposing the crookedness of some of the cops who were making movie deals before they captured her. So that made her doubly crazy. It was like law and order should be upright and just. She was a law and order type of person. She was far more of a capitalist than I was.
My goodness.
And did not understand, never could comprehend why I and others like me would do something for no money.
Yes.
Made no sense. I mean, she had a point.
No, exactly.
She had a point.
Makes a lot of sense. Wow. Oh, I hope you guys are really into this right now. This is so compelling. I'm going to hold up the book. My special guest on screen with me today is Dr. Phyllis Chesler. Here it is. All right. She's the author of her latest book, Requiem of a Female Serial Killer. It's about the famous case. You guys have probably heard about her. Eileen Wuornos. She was accused of killing seven adult male. They were, I would just say they were Johns probably. Who,
you know. Some were, some might not have been.
Okay. You think so? Okay. Yeah. And this is a compelling read. And I know from our interview, I love what you're rolling out here psychologically as well, Phyllis. This is so fascinating, especially my listeners love psychology. So, I mean, they're really getting a taste for what you dealt with when you were talking with her on the phone. And how interesting for you. Because you, on one hand, of course, like you said, you know, you're a realist about this woman was a murderer. But again, it the heartfelt sadness about her life and what she had gone through was just, must have been really difficult for you. And I, from reading your book, I have a feeling you were more on the side of, my God, look at what this poor soul went through. It doesn't justify her being a murderer and these people are no longer alive, but my goodness, it's so important to point out the trauma of this particular woman's life, too.
Well, it's interesting. There's if you really abuse a woman so routinely, so early on, and so badly, maybe she'll come and get other men who haven't been abusing her at the start. Maybe it'll be something like Marlene Gorris's film, A Question of Silence, that brilliant filmmaker. Women who've been treated with contempt, don't know each other, they're in a shop, a male clerk treats them with contempt, and they kill him. Right. And they never explain anything. And the female psychiatrist, who was supposed to find them abnormal, could find nothing wrong with them and join them and finally explained it's like a crime committed during a war.
Yes.
So we could now, of course, patriarchy was not on trial in that courtroom. She was. But metaphorically, and in terms of feminist followers, no, it was the Johns who were or should have been on trial, and she was the avenging angel that we could never be for all the fathers who raped their little girls or other men's little girls. We let it pass. All the rape victims who are allowed, the rape kits aren't tested for 20 years in America, and the rapists continue raping. All of those circumstances, and there are many violence against women circumstances, she got something back. Maybe men would be, some thought, a little more afraid of messing with women badly. I fear that's not the case, right, but it's certainly a thought.
Right. Wow. That is so interesting. Did you feel in your interviews with her that she had a certain amount of anger or defense against you, Dr. Chesler?
Oh, yes, yes. And she, oh, poor thing. Everyone who came to her aid, she ultimately got rid of, is trying to get either famous off of her or rich off of her. And it wasn't just me. I was one of many who ultimately sent me their correspondence or communicated with me about they thought that she would welcome them. They tried so hard. They sent money. They sent stamps. They marched to free her. And then she turned on them. So the poor soul didn't have a clue about who to trust, who to hire. She hired, after her public defenders, who were, by the way, very good lawyers, but there was only so much they could do. She hired such a jerk, such an embarrassment that words cannot convey it.
Oh, dear.
He didn't defend her. He allowed her to plead out all the other, no more trials. She said, all right, kill me. And I tried to explain to her, you know, once they have you, it's up to them whether you live or die and when they kill you. Yeah. And she knew how to alienate good people, and she knew how to stick to very dicey people, you know?
Yes, absolutely. You know that film that was done, Charlize Theron won an Academy Award. It was called Monster.
Yes.
And it actually was about Eileen Wuornos. So I know you've seen the film, of course. So
yes.
What parts of the film were real or much like the case or Eileen, and what parts were a little off?
By the way, I love Patty Jenkins' work and Charlize Theron's work. First, her lover Tyria was nothing like the Christina Ricci character, because I interviewed Tyria, opposite ends of the earth.
Yes.
And Charlize Theron got her body language. She was able to impersonate the body language. But getting inside her head, not so much. Yes, there was a little sympathy, requisite amount of sympathy for her childhood, without enormous comprehensive understanding of the violence that prostitution is about toward women and sometimes boys and men. I don't like the title Monster.
Right.
All of these films out there that glamorize Jack the Ripper and all the male lookalikes,
right,
don't do that. They should, perhaps, but they view them as romantic figures who are upholding male supremacy for us, right? And women's corpses, they're expected to be there. I mean, I shudder. I mean, I read a lot about serial killers and, oh, it's such awful, dark, terrible reading. I don't understand the enormous fascination with the subject. Women are fascinated.
Yes, yes. That's so interesting to me, too. I was going to ask you that. Yeah, go ahead.
I know. I wrote an article about it. And, you know, we could joke a little. Look, you want a boyfriend? If you got one in prison, he's not going to be able to cheat on you. And you don't have to do his laundry or cook his meals. Way to go. But female delusions of omnipotence. I will turn Heathcliff, I will turn Bluebeard into the good man he could be, he was meant to be. It's Beauty and the Beast stuff.
Yes.
So it's crazy. It's not my cup of tea. But, you know, but women have a long history of being attracted to bad boys.
Right.
But these are like beyond bad. These are killers of women.
Yes, exactly. And that's a whole other psychological thing to delve into with women as to why they do go for the bad boys. You know, who was daddy, or why don't they think they deserve, or
right.
deeper levels. And even if they are not, you know, prostitutes and have not been abused or mistreated, well, many of them have. But what is that about, you know, the self-esteem, or about that you deserve someone who's going to reject you, or that you think that you can change, or you're that special person?
There's a lot of that. Yeah. A lot of, I'm that special person, I can change him. It's so delusional. But, you know, Warnos has a cult following. I didn't know this. And I write about it.
Right, you do.
In the last chapter. I wish you can get mugs, t-shirts, you can get her dirt from where her ashes was scattered in Michigan. And there's a little cottage industry. I mean, Ted Bundy has many more mementos, and they're much more expensive. But she, I mean, people have written songs to her, country. It's quite amazing, because she's seen also as anti-authority, kick-assing, biker bard, white chick, you know, tough woman who became also famous. The obsession with being famous, even if it's notorious, is so deep that there are Americans who go to the last bar, a biker bar where she used to hang out, and who rent for the night one of the motel rooms she once slept in, vacation destinations. So I, you know, because she represents getting back at authority, being nobody who becomes somebody.
Right.
She's like beyond Billy the Kid. She's like an American folk hero.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have anticipated that? But it is so.
Exactly. Who would have anticipated that? Like Bonnie and Clyde, you know.
Right. And there's so few female on their own outlaws who are then ballads. I mean, the ballads have been written to her.
Right.
And, you know, I should have been savvier, but boy, was I educated and shocked.
Oh, it is shocking in a way, you know, but then again, you know, being the psychotherapist you are, you understand, you know, we all need something to identify with, and especially if we need to, you know, have that respect for a badass woman who's fighting back.
Well, you know, I just got a very nice quote from Gloria Steinem, who got right to the bottom line. We have begun to accept that women are victims.
Right.
But can we now open our minds and hearts to the fact that women fight back? And we should be paying attention to that as a, not negatively, but as a positive thing, not merely anger, which is expressed among safe women, but anger on the street, anger at the sight of the violence, maybe holy anger, maybe justified anger. But, and that, I think the world is not yet ready for.
Right.
I mean, I don't think the world has been ready for the Me Too movement either. That's a discussion.
Right.
But women then standing their ground or measure for measure. I mean, Warnos punched up. She took on men that were bigger and heavier, much taller than she was. This is another unusual thing. And her Tyria, her lover, said she never let anyone get away with anything. She would fight with everyone about anything. So, you know, think of that.
Or she just had that whole, you know, sense of defensiveness with everyone and everything, because
yes,
that's her neural pattern since she was a child, basically, in survival.
Probably, yes.
That's what I'm thinking, you know, about what it is. Let me hold the book up again so everybody can get it. It's really good. It's a compelling story. With my special guest author, Dr. Phyllis Chickler, right here. The book is called Requiem for a Female Serial Killer. You may have seen the trials. I don't know if you have followed the news on it, but it's about, they say it's the first female serial killer. Actually probably one of the most recognized because of the media that we had available.
Yes.
Murdered 7, at least they say, men. It's Eileen Warnos. It's the case of her, and my special guest, Dr. Phyllis Chickler, really spent many hours talking with her, interviewing her, and researching her background to find out just why she did what she did, who she was as a person. And this book is fascinating because it delves not only, you know, into what happened and the story, but also the psychological aspect of the torture this woman went through. And all the while, by the way, it's, you know, Dr. Chickler's not condemning or condoning murder at all in this book, but it's really giving you a glimpse to open your mind to see the torture and suffering that this woman went through and where she was at. And it's a terrific read. You can't put it down. Once you get going, it's like, oh my gosh, then what happened next? You know? So thank you for that. It's excellent.
Bless you. I should keep my mouth shut because here you are singing the praise of the work.
Well, it is good. It's excellent work. And you did your research, which is so appreciative. You know, it really is. Something I wanted to ask you, because it was on my mind too, because I was thinking about all the movies that have portrayed prostitutes, speaking about Eileen. Like Pretty Women, and you know that it's really, they can be happy doing what they're doing because it's really, you know, it's really, it's okay, and it's, that's not the reality of the majority of the cases.
No. Yeah. It could be true for 1%, and right, nobody would say a mother of 3 kids who was starving can't do whatever she has to do to feed herself and them. But the majority of prostitutes in America are young, very young. That's a male preference, teenagers, younger even. And they tend to be increasingly African-American girls and women, racially marginalized, impoverished. And then Asian women who are trafficked in to America. It is an industry that's bigger than guns or drugs. It's sex slavery. I'm an abolitionist. It is, for all those who say Black Lives Matter, my question is, how about Black prostituted women's lives?
Yes.
Do they matter?
Yes.
Do Black battered women's lives matter? Because I didn't see signs or chants while people were marching. It threw me right back to the 1960s, where I was involved in civil rights and movements and anti-Vietnam War movements, where the girls were, you know, make the coffee and lay down prone. So this is like, so prostitution is rampant. It's pandemic. I have to say again that we would need, the incoming Biden administration would need such political will and such capacity with funding realities to expand the Violence Against Women Act and the William Wilberforce Against Trafficking in Human Persons Act to really fund it so that there's a shelter on every corner, that there's really an exit possibility for battered women, raped women, and certainly prostituted women who are, if you will, they're being paid to be raped. Yes. And the deal is, okay, if that's how I get my money, I guess you can rape me. But anyone who says, oh, it's a wonderful life, it's an easy life, it's a glamorous life, in Nevada, where it's legal, oh my goodness, yes, the brothels have bars on them and they're in remote locations and the women are worked to death and they don't get very much money.
Right, exactly.
How can we allow slavery to proceed apace in our midst, in our time, without standing against it?
Right.
It's a question.
Right, it's a beautifully put, beautifully put. Unfortunately, we're getting close to the time when our show's almost over with. I wish I had hours with you.
Well, we can talk again, certainly, because you have all the right questions.
Oh.
You have the same keen psychological sensitivities that are required for this kind of discussion.
Thank you so much. And thank you again. So I appreciate that, Phyllis. And again, you really are one of the truly great, and you continue to evolve top feminist, not only in America, but in the world. And you're an author of 20 books, as well as having been published over the years in mainstream media and considered one of the feminists who changed America. And you have. And thank you so much for being who you are, Dr. Chesler.
Thank you so much, Dr. Michelle.
Sure. What is the best way people can find out more about you besides going on Amazon and getting all your books?
well, or Barnes and Noble or any indie online site. Go to my website. Don't be shocked by some of the things that I write, which is www.phyllis-chesler.com, Phyllis-chesler, when last I looked. That was the spelling.
And I just looked before we went on the air, so you're right on.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
My pleasure. And have a lovely holiday and a wonderful, healthy new year.
Same to you. Same to all. Bye.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for being here on the couch with me on LA Talk Radio. It's been great. Hope you really enjoyed this interview with Dr. Phyllis Chesler. Again, we'll have information up in the archives as to how you can find out more about her and get her book. As I always say, do take care of yourself first and you'll be great for others. And that's the way it works in the world. Thanks for listening. Dr. Michelle Cohen saying Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.